Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for coming to my talk, which will be about quantum tomographic reconstruction with error bars. I believe this is one of the topics of the workshop, so I think you might be interested. This is joint work with Stefan Scheel at Imperial. Before I start giving my talk, mind if I ask a small question? How would you like your quantum states? Well done, that's what I thought, yeah. Well, I'm a bit of an odd personality. I'd rather have them the sunny side up. What that means, I'll explain in a minute. So the goals of the work I set out to do here is to have a tomographic reconstruction method that takes error bars into account. In fact, that gives you error bars on the reconstruction. Now, what does that mean? It means that I don't want a reconstruction method that says something like, this is the state. No, I want something that tells you, well, this is the maximum likelihood state, for example, but if you say that this is the state, that's perfectly well with me. The data from them. Tomographic measurement does not exclude this one. So what I really want is something that tells me, well, this is a state which is maybe the maximum likelihood one, but if it's in this circle, that's going to be true with 50% probability. With 50% probability, it's going to be there. Or shall I use the word confidence region? The confidence region of 95% is this one. States the sunny side up. The yolk and the egg white. So that's what I want.
First you said there's a 50% probability. Well, yeah. And then you used a confidence interval.
No, I mean the confidence interval was a slip of the tongue. Okay. So
these are both concentration intervals in Bayesian sense?
Yes. So in one dimensions, the probability would look something like that. And the 50% of the probability mass would be the yolk. And the 95% probability would be the egg whites. And all the rest would be your plate. So that's one goal. Second goal is, as always, I want that the reconstruction to be physical. So sometimes we'll have that these states would be non-physical and these would be physical, then I would have to do something there. I used to be an engineer, so I want to have a fast method. And I also want to have a statistically sound method. If there is a statistician in the audience, I don't want him to yell at me. Like there's the zero eigenvalue problem that was mentioned on the website. I want to avoid that. I'll explain what I mean by this. Methods I will use is actually Bayesian inference. I just came out of the closet. And what I'll do is I approximate the tomographic process by what's called a linear Gaussian model, which I'll explain. And that will allow me to use the so-called Kalman filter update equations to do what I want to do. And as I told you, it does not give us a single maximum likelihood solution, but a confidence region centered around, well, a mean value. And I can tell you now, this mean value will not be the maximum likelihood solution. More about Kalman. So I mentioned the word tomographic process. What I mean by that is that if you do tomography on a state, you measure it n times using some POVM with elements pi, that gives you a two-step process. Given a state and given those POVMs, that gives me certain probabilities for the outcomes of my measurement. And if I do that measurement n times, this will give me frequencies of the various outcomes. So the first step here is linear, is just governed by Born's rule, basically, trace rho pi, where pi k is the kth element. The second step from probabilities to frequencies is the, well, I call it the quantum noise process. And depending on how you do your tomography, that could be a multinomial process or a Poisson process, but I'll stick to the multinomial. And it basically means that given the probabilities p, your frequencies f will be a random variable, which is distributed according to the multinomial distribution with parameters n and these probabilities p. So this is one slice of the tomography, but I do that a number of times with different POVMs, different orientations, so to speak. Well, from that tomographic process, I can do Bayesian inference to find out what state I have. So recall the forward process starts from rho, gives you probabilities p, that gives you frequencies f. I want to do the inverse step, I want to do it backwards to infer the statistics. So from f, I want to find out what p is, or I want to know information about p, and from that, give me information about rho. And the simple rule that allows me to do this is the well-known Bayes rule. So I start from prior knowledge, a prior probability density function on rho, whatever that is. I multiply with the likelihood function. So given rho, what's the distribution of f? That's given by what I just told, Born's rule plus the multinomial. And what I get from that is a posterior density function. Given the measurement f, what is the distribution of rho? So the distribution, something like this, or something like my egg. So it's proportional because I still have to normalize the thing. By normalizing the posterior, I get a real probability density function. Well, what about that prior? For the first tomographic slice, so the first POVM setting, I assume a flat prior. So I assume nothing. I just say, I have no clue what my state is. So uniform over state space. Therefore, the prior just drops out. OK. I see you coming. No, you really shouldn't. It doesn't really matter what I start out with. Bayesians are used to this kind of question. What I want to know is what the measurements tell me. If you have a certain prior in mind, please put it in there. But I'm interested what the measurements tell me. Well, I went a little bit into the closet again, I suppose. But so you're with me if I can say that, well, it doesn't really matter because you can always update it afterwards. No problem. So the posterior, well, what? So far, no problem. So the posterior that I get there is just proportional to the likelihood function, quite simple. And for the next measurement settings, for the next tomography slices, I take the posterior I just got here and supply that as prior for the next slice. So you just stack up all these likelihood functions. Sure, indeed. So I'm talking about mixed states, and I say, well, every mixed state is equally probable. Or if I have reasons to assume that some states are more probable, then I just do that. No, so. If you start out with saying that mixed states have zero probability, then you will never get a mixed state out of it. That's not true. That's not true. It can be. This mean here can be a pure state. We're talking over the space of density matrices.
Yes, but if you start with a prior that's par uniform, the only way to get a mean of the posterior that's on the boundary.
Okay.
Is to rule out all states. You can't rule out that many states.
Okay.
This is off topic.
We'll switch to intelligent audience mode. So actually.
Oh, wait a minute, some of us are going.
We need to make some trouble, right?
If you want trouble, you got trouble. So I don't care what prior you start out with. In fact, I start out with a prior that's not even physical, because otherwise my method doesn't work. So I start out and I remove the unphysicality afterwards. I keep the best thing for the end. Are you still with me? Great. So we have this nice concatenation of likelihoods and some prior whatever. And that's basically Bayesian inversion. That's the Bayesian method, which looks like being very simple. But in practice, of course, it could be quite complicated, because how do you represent these likelihoods efficiently on your state space? Well, I will proceed in two steps, because we have these two steps in the tomography process, and we'll do the same with the inversion. So first, I keep it simple, I keep it classical. I invert the quantum noise process first. So from F, I want to find out what the probabilities were. So that was this multinomial process. And then I treat this linear POVM mapping in the second step. And I want, so for this first inversion step, I want to do it in the proper way. For example, I want to avoid that zero eigenvalue problem, which is the following. Suppose you do a measurement, and for a certain outcome, you get no clicks. No clicks doesn't allow us to conclude zero probability. Quite obvious. Well, if you board an airplane, you know that you're taking a certain risk, even if you're still alive. It turns out that this problem here was one of the first problems to be treated ever in a proper way by this guy. That's 18th century. The man was ahead of his time. Nobody believed him, because they even didn't know what an airplane was. But he came out with what's called the rule of succession. So suppose you have F out of N flights that do crash, so if N is a big number, what is the probability that your next flight will crash? Important, based on that information alone, because you might have other information. And the answer Laplace gave was the rule of succession. It is the frequency plus one divided by the number of times you check plus two. That's the important thing. So the two outcomes, crash and no crash, get one additional count each. Counts that are called in statistics pseudo counts, because they correspond to no real events. So therefore, if F equals zero, P will be non-zero. There's no hand waving involved.
No, sorry, wait a minute. Explain why the hell you have one in the numerator and two in the denominator.
Here it comes. Because you can rephrase that in mono language, in Bayesian language. So we have the forward process, P leading to F, which is a multinomial distribution. That means the likelihood function is just this PDF of the multinomial, the familiar expression here. So if you take a flat prior, that's what Laplace meant, taking no other information into account. Then you get a posterior, a distribution of P given F that's proportional to this product of powers here. So the basic part of the multinomial. Now we want to normalize this over the allowed values of P, so the simplex positive P adding up to one, And if you do the calculation, that means you have to multiply by n plus d minus 1 factorial. Complicated things, but the statisticians have done this ages ago, and this yields the Dirichlet distribution, which is the higher dimensional generalization of the beta distribution, which you might know. So the upshot is the distribution of P given F is a Dirichlet distribution. And if I may draw this, so in the extreme case, for example, where F equals 0, so F1 equals 0, F2 equals n, then it looks like this. So it only takes values for P between 0 and 1, of course, and the distribution in that case looks like this. So the maximum likelihood value is, of course, 0, but the mean is offset. And it turns out to be offset by 1 over, in this case, n plus 2. And that's how magically these plus 1s occur. So the d is the dimension. So the number of outcomes. And this, so if you're talking about the airplanes, it's 2. So we had n over 2. That would be the beta distribution. So we have a skew distribution here, and we're looking at the mean value and not the mode. That's the important thing. So?
To get this succession.
Absolutely, and that's why people didn't believe him. He was not talking about airplanes, but about the sunrises. What's the probability that the sun rises tomorrow, given that it has done so in 10 or 100 days before? And he said, well, it would be 1 over 102. Of course, nobody believed him because we all know it's going to rise. But that is taking into account other information rather than just the statistical information. Well, people are beginning to believe him now. So here's a quote. We have to look, we better look at the mean of this posterior, because one could say it's more representative than the mode, because it takes into account the skewness of the PDF. So out goes maximum likelihood. Yes, it does, in my view. So this is, well, the first part, so the quantum noise process. The second part involves the linear part. So once I have this distribution of P, what does this tell us about the distribution of rho? And the problem there is that rho is high-dimensional, complicated structure. How do you represent these products of Dirichlet? Well, I don't know. So therefore, I approximate. That's one engineering rule. I used to be an engineer, I told you. So what I propose to do is approximate this Dirichlet by a Gaussian with the same mean and with the same variance or covariance if it's higher dimensional. So I do something like that. It's not the same thing, but it gives you the same idea.
In such a way that, of course, some part of it is unphysical because P is negative, but you don't mind.
I don't mind because I get that unphysicality anyway. So I'll deal with this later if I have the time. So the upshot of all this is that your tomography process is turned into what's called a linear Gaussian model, and that allows use of Kalman filtering.
Question. The goal of writing down this distribution was, in fact, to find the mean, right? So if we're going to replace the distribution by a Gaussian that has the same mean, don't we need the mean in order to do that?
But we have the mean because it starts from F. We have the measurement. So given the frequencies, I get this Dirichlet, with the parameters f, I can calculate the mean and the covariance of that Dirichlet, okay, and then take those as the parameters of the Gaussian. So that works. Right, so then enters Mr. Kalman, who did some interesting work, and that allowed to do something about Apollo 13. So if you want to measure the position of Apollo 13 in space, you have to assume a certain dynamical model. It's not there, it's moving. And the model is, it obeys a linear differential equation with a perturbation that's additive Gaussian white noise. So this equation. And then using your whatever radio telescopes, you measure the state, you measure where it is, and that's also governed by a linear process, so it's a linear mapping. From the real position, you get some measurement, and that is also corrupted with Gaussian noise. That's a linear Gaussian model. In our case, we're dealing with a state that's supposed to be constant. It's always the same rho we're measuring, so we can do away with that one. We only need this one here. But of course, if your state is slowly drifting, you might think about incorporating this too. So there's work to be done there for drift. Well, I'm not going to derive all this, but for linear Gaussian models, all the distributions are Gaussians, determined by the first and second moments. And the Bayesian inference equation simplify to just this. So the PDFs are governed by mean covariance. So if mu and sigma are the initial, the prior, so to speak, then we can incorporate the measurements governed by mean z and covariance theta and get a posterior PDF with new moments, mu prime and sigma prime. These are just matrix calculations. Yes, but well, it's a little bit more involved than it looks here. So z will be actually this mean here. So for our case, I'm writing a paper on this, so I can show you that it's a bit more involved. So zero mean gets replaced by that mean. So K is a Kalman gain factor, as it's called. And this matrix H defines the measurement. So that would be a matrix containing the entries of the POVM elements. So for every measurement setting, you apply these updated equations just once. So if you have 16 measurement settings, that's 16 applications of these equations. That could be pretty quick. So,
The continuous limit of that?
Really not an expert in Kalman filtering, but I believe it has a connection there.
You get Riccati equations in both continuous and discrete.
So it would be discrete case of Riccati.
If you have a discrete time model, xt plus 1 equals xt something, you can get a Riccati.
So, apologies, I'm not the expert. I'm just using it. So, does it work in practice? I have a demo here. Time constraints. Just show you without explaining. It's about a measurement of an optical POVM, which has 9 POVM elements. And it's diagonal, so you only have to look at the diagonal matrix elements of that. It's an optical one, you send light into it and you record clicks. Well, complicated matter. But this is Kalman filtering in action. So what you see here are just the diagonal elements of the first POVM element together with their error bars. This is a movie, but it's real, almost the same speed as real time. Plotting the solution takes longer than calculating it. So you see, it's really practical. What you also see is that the mean, which is this line, gets below zero. It's gone now. So unphysical indeed.
The axis is 100 watts.
So axis is zero.
Yeah, but what is the horizontal axis?
Oh, okay, so the PoVM elements are indexed by photon numbers. So this would be photon number. So if you send a Fock state into it, then it would respond with probability given by the height here.
Because time is real time.
And time is just the number of measurement settings you have done. So,
and it converges. This movie somehow converges to the in more or less invariant distribution.
There is no convergence involved. It's just taking in the measurements and updating these eggs there. They shrink the eggs until you have incorporated all measurements and the error bars are as small as possible.
That's what I mean. That eventually you hope that this error bar will be fixed somehow, will converge.
Well, in this particular case, it's really bad because we have to look at these PoVMs with coherent states. And they're very bad for finding out the matrix elements, but they're all we have. So at some point, the errors are just stuff.
Those are your error bars that you're saying?
Yeah, so the error bars.
Yeah, but what are the vertical lines to the right?
So the vertical lines to the right are error bars that are humongously great. So here you get reasonable ones. Uh-huh. So you cannot get any further than 4 or 5 photons for this case. Now I have a method for restricting this to physical state space, which incidentally is also using Kalman filtering. Can't explain it here. I'll just show you what it does using one other movie film. It's restricting all the matrix elements in succession, but because restricting one matrix element influences the previous step, I have to do this a number of times over and over again. Here I'm estimating the POVM elements of an optical POVM. Ah. So it's not really a state, but I treat it.
So the speed depends on the system.
Yes. Okay. So the dimension is really big. It's 900. Ah. Because I have 9 POVM elements, and I take photon numbers up to 100.
Okay.
So we're talking about 900 values that have to be checked.
Second question is that it seems to me that the error bar is too big compared to the variation of the mean.
The mean is
the
not.
Error bar is big. It's too big.
It is too big because I'm not finished here yet. What one has to do is do this method a number of times over again until it converges. So that'll be the last thing I'll show you. So this is the second iteration. It's already smaller. The third iteration, squeezing out toothpaste almost. And the fourth iteration gets really small. And in the end, we have rather small error bars for the first matrix elements.
Are these just diagonal elements of the density matrix?
The diagonal elements of the POVM elements, yes.
But is it possible to expand and extend this method to all diagonal elements?
Sure. I haven't done that yet. It's work in progress, but there's a simple way of doing this. And just showing the last.
How many data do you collect in total?
So per measurement setting is 38,084, about 40,000 measurements. So the data
per iteration or in total?
Per iteration.
So in total how many you have? No.
40,000 times 100.
4 million.
Couple of million.
Okay, so it's this.
So these are the frequencies.
No, because So you get good results also.
You get good results, at least on that first. So that's the first element. The second element is already a bit worse. It gets worse for the higher elements. You get higher bars. But it's not to do with the method. It's just the data that are bad. And I can also do a maximum entropy. Well, if you want to know more about it, I can tell you afterwards.
Okay, the measurement is performed in which way? By which? What is the photo? The photo
counting? It's, well, the measurement is the device itself. It's the device that's been. The measurement device is being measured.
I know, but in order to do that, you must have some probability distribution which comes from another measurement.
So I just send coherent states into that device and record the clicks.
Okay.
And that's the measurement.
You must know some, for example, the coherent state.
Yes, so the coherent state has to be known.
Okay.
And that's the alpha parameter.
I understand. So you have known coherent states that you send many times to the QVM.
Yeah. And that gives you the result. So I'd like to conclude here. I'm already 1 minute late. I'm bad at giving conclusions. So, thank you very much.